Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Even as Hurricane Milton threatens Florida, that state, as well as Georgia, North and South Carolina, along with portions of Tennessee and Virginia, are still dealing with the damage caused by Hurricane Helene and will be for months, possibly years to come. Just over a week ago, Helene slammed into the southeast and wreaked havoc in an unusual place, the North Carolina mountains. The destruction there has been catastrophic, with landslides, flooding, loss of power and communications, a lack of water for municipal water supplies, and, of course, a tragically high loss of life. Although the mountains aren't immune to flooding or even high winds caused by the occasional hurricane that reaches that far inland, this storm was different. This storm dumped over 2 feet of rain on parts of the mountains, submerging some towns and wiping others off the map. The recovery is going to take a long time. So why did the area experience what Governor Cooper has called an unprecedented tragedy? How are the recovery efforts going this morning? What lessons have we learned from this monstrous storm? For answers, we turn to some folks who lived through that storm and are living in the aftermath. Laura Hackett is a reporter for Blue Ridge Public Radio. Zeb Smathers is the mayor of Canton, North Carolina, one of the communities devastated by Helene. And Jason Boyer is chief meteorologist with WLOS-TV, the ABC affiliate in Asheville, serving the Greenville-Spartanburg-Asheville region. Thank you all three for being here. Welcome.
Thank you, Mike.
Laura, I'm going to start with you. I'm presuming you're living in Asheville. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
How are you doing this morning? I see you have power.
I'm one of the lucky folks who was able to have power, you know, somewhat quickly after the storm. I was definitely in the minority with that. I am doing okay. I think day 13 without running water, and that's beginning to take a toll on many people here. Just all of the lifestyle changes that, you know, have, you know, driving to a center for water, not being able to do your dishes or your laundry or anything like that. Grateful to be here and be safe. But just so much destruction all over the region, and the recovery does feel very daunting at this point. So, you know, just trying to pace ourselves, you know, I think the adrenaline response to this whole disaster has kind of fallen down, and now we're all, you know, trying to have energy to keep doing this every day.
So what kind of progress toward recovery? And it's going to take a long, long, long time, far longer than people probably even know today. How much can you see evidence of things getting better at all, anywhere?
Yeah, I mean, I went through a walk in my neighborhood yesterday and in West Asheville, and I did see more lights on in the houses. So I know that power is definitely starting to come back for a lot of folks. I think, I don't have a number right now, but I think it was at over 100,000 in Buncombe County, and it's down to closer around like 20,000. So definitely making progress there. People are also just really organized right now. Every place that you go, every church, every corner where there is community that gathers, there's these, you know, kind of homegrown distribution centers, and folks are, you know, getting water out. And MREs and baby supplies and Tylenol, all of those things that we're finding ourselves really needing right now. So I would say, like, we're organized, but in terms of the other infrastructure, the water, we still do have no timeline for when the water is going to come back. And many roads are still just washed out right now.
You are no stranger to hurricanes. You grew up in Florida. You told me just before we started that you had just gotten off the phone with your parents who still live in Florida, and they're dealing with having to evacuate because of Hurricane Milton, which is has a bullseye on the state of Florida right now. How would you compare what you went through in the Asheville area and what the western North Carolina mountains went through with Helene to the hurricanes that you have experienced in Florida?
Yeah, that, and it's true that I've experienced definitely a fair share of hurricanes in my day. I would say the rapid intensification of these two storms just feel really different than the ones of my childhood. That doesn't mean that, I haven't seen destruction. I was around in 2004 for Hurricane Charlie. My mom is actually, she was a longtime journalist, so I remember her covering Hurricane Charlie, and that was really, really devastating for the, Gulf Coast area. But I would say just the rapid intensification of these two storms, and I mean, in Asheville, that's not something we ever expected, is to have a hurricane devastate our region. So I think
Right.
just a feeling of these hurricanes feeling a lot different, a lot more powerful, a lot more catastrophic than what we knew a few decades ago.
Zeb Smathers is with us. He is the mayor of Canton, North Carolina. And let me start with you asking about how you, your family, and your community are doing this morning.
Well, my family's safe. My sister lost her home again. I think Canton's story is a little bit different than the rest of the region, in that 3 years ago, the remnants of Tropical Storm Fred hit Canton, the Crusoe Bethel area. We lost six people. We lost our town hall, our fire department, our river district, Pisgah Memorial Stadium, which means a lot to us here in Canton. And it's deja vu all over again. But the difference is this time we learned a lot of lessons from Fred. We put in an application. I worked with Jason Boyer early on. We saw this storm coming. We warned people. We got, small things, getting businesses to get their inventory out, letting people, be aware of, hey, let's get the debris out of the river. We've been working on that for several years. That made a huge difference. So we learned a lot of lessons, and we prepared the best that we can. Respectfully, no town or county was better prepared than Haywood County. But when 28 feet of water, comes to your town, that gives way to prayer. And you're at that point on, you're just holding on. And so there's a lot of lessons learned. But again, quickly we realized, this is a not just apocalyptic for Canton, but the entire region. And so the other thing that hindered us was communications went out. We lost the whole region, lost cell phone coverage
Right.
minutes into the storm. And that lasted for days and days and continues to some. And, when you cannot, connect with your emergency management, when you have loved ones not able to reach their loved ones, I mean, only till a few days ago did I stop getting messages from loved ones searching because I hadn't heard anything. And you're afraid of what you don't know. So as much as we were prepared, we got hit. The recovery, our recovery is different than other places because we knew what to do. We've restored electricity and water to Canton, our telecommunications coming back online, our businesses are opening. That's because of the hard work and volunteers of our region, but also lessons learned. But also, we want to catch our breath and get over to Buncombe County, Yancey County, Mitchell County. Our hearts are just broken for our neighbors.
For people who don't know, Canton is about the, I think, population somewhere in the neighborhood of 4,100 people. It's west of Asheville, about 25 minutes away. You called what your town went through an apocalyptic disaster, and we began talking about you on this program the Monday after this storm hit, and again in several other programs that we've devoted to this, because you have called what happened with your cell system heartbreaking, disgraceful, and unacceptable. And you added that you're not going to tell me that there weren't things that could have been done better. Knowing what you know today, and I would assume that you know more today than you did when you made those statements because it was in the immediate aftermath of the storm, do you stand by what you said?
I do, and that may be some of the nicest things I've said. That was public. But sadly, Mike, I don't. As I stand here today, and I think this goes, I had conversations from the White House to Governor Cooper. I still do not know what happened. And the idea that this is a network across the West. This isn't one cell tower in one area. And so I still have a lot of questions of what happened because, again, we know this will happen again. Sadly, probably West North Carolina, other places. Losing that cell phone coverage, I personally think put lives at risk. I don't, can I point to a specific thing? I don't need to. The idea that you can't communicate with someone, and it's not like, here in Canton, we have 5G. We're 20 minutes from Asheville. These places are not so you know, mountainous in most areas, they don't have cell phone coverage. And to have it down for so long, there's still a lot of questions. But right now, it's rescue and recovery. It's volunteer. But there will be a time and place where the people of West North Carolina, especially ones that lost someone, they need answers.
Well, I was going to ask you, and maybe Jason, who's with WLOS-TV and has a newsroom at his disposal, or perhaps Laura from Blue Ridge Public Radio, know an answer to this. What did happen? I mean, was it the fact that the towers went down? Is it the fact that the fiber between connecting the towers to the main system was washed away? Was it because of some other situation that knocked out cell communication? What exactly happened there? Does anybody know? Jason, you're nodding.
I wish I had an answer for you, Mike, and for everybody. I don't think we know exactly what has happened because they haven't been as transparent with us, the cellular companies. But I can assume it was infrastructure on their end that was destroyed or compromised significantly enough to limit the communications. It is frustrating, and it is certainly a life-threatening situation when you cannot get not only to talk to people, but get weather warnings out. People use their phones a lot for that. And if there is a disconnect there, that is certainly something that would be very concerning. And I think they're going to have to look back, and these companies are going to have to figure out a better way to guarantee that they're not going to go offline.
People have to understand that when the power goes out, you have no TV for the most part. When the cell towers go out, you can't even watch it on your internet browser on your phone. When people have to turn to radio, some people don't have radios anymore. They listen to radio on the internet or on their phone, if they listen to it at all. So you're completely in the dark when these modern communications go down. And Zeb, you said that we're living in the 21st century, and in terms of communications, we're dealing with 1990s technology. Had there been no cell phones, had it just been landlines, you would have lost that too, most likely. What is the answer to this? Is everybody has a Starlink? Is that the answer to this?
Well, I mean, that's what saved us. Luckily, one of our officers had a Starlink, and we were running communications from that Starlink. Also, you saw AM radio stations, FM radio stations. We went old school, and I commend these stations. We were running emergency management, you know, HOPE, because again, I mean, not to, you know, the next chapter of this, that radio, that communication blackout, we had services on the ground, state, federal, churches, shelters, weather warnings. We could not communicate those. So everyone was in the dark, what was here, how we could help. And I think that led to some of the misinformation you're seeing, because we couldn't communicate at all. But I think, again, something I've said over and over again with so many issues, the people of West North Carolina, no matter where you call home, you know, doesn't matter your community or your cove, you deserve the best. And the idea that our telecommunications company, who, you know, I appreciate, I got a text from Verizon. I didn't have communication, but I got a text saying my bill was due. that was a nice touch. But they deserve the best. And this is an area that is very populated, very successful economically. And no matter where you live, you deserve the best. So again, if our infrastructure was left out and we were neglected, that's a major concern for me, because in no place in North Carolina should be put in this situation, especially the citizens of the mountains.
I have 30 seconds left, Mr. Mayor. Just out of curiosity, the AT&T and Verizon both have brought crews to the mountains and working as quickly, they say, as they can. Are they, in your opinion?
We are seeing vast improvements, but there are still areas that people will go into SOS mode. They'll drop calls. Also, Spectrum, trying to get our businesses back online. We're trying to increase that. So, but we're seeing progress, but we're not where we need to be.
We have to take a break. We'll come back with more on recovery efforts in the Western North Carolina mountains in just a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte. Using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE in Hickory. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the devastation in the mountains and the recovery from Hurricane Helene with Laura Hackett, who's a reporter with Blue Ridge Public Radio. Zeb Smathers is the mayor of Canton, North Carolina, and Jason Boyer is the chief meteorologist with WLOS-TV in Asheville. We're going to talk with Jason in a minute about exactly why this storm was so powerful and what this portends for the future. Both in the mountains and throughout the country, as a matter of fact, with climate change. We were talking just before the break, Laura, about cell phone communications being knocked out in great swaths of areas. Both FEMA and Elon Musk, who owns the Starlink, satellite telephone communications system, have moved transponders into the area to help reestablish phone service. How is that working? Laura.
Yeah, yes. Hey, how is Starlink working?
I said that. Sorry. No, FEMA, that's okay. Both FEMA and Elon Musk have moved Starlink devices into the area for satellite cell phone service. How's that working?
Yeah, there's been a few communities where I've been out and folks have been really excited about having the opportunity to use Starlink. So I was out in Swannanoa and I believe they have a Starlink service set up there. And so I think people are just, happy to finally, have an opportunity to get online again. Without the Starlink, folks have been just kind of congregating outside of areas that somehow do have Wi-Fi. So the library in downtown Asheville, for instance, when this first hit, there was just hordes of people standing outside trying to get a Wi-Fi signal. It was really slow. So I think, people are just looking forward to getting internet back on as best as they can, whether that's Starlink or whether that's, Spectrum, which is the region's internet provider. So people are just, definitely ready to be more connected and talk with their loved ones.
Zeb Mathers, Donald Trump has alleged that FEMA was preventing Elon Musk, whose company owns and operates these Starlink satellite devices, from getting those units in place. But isn't it true that FEMA has its own supply of these devices and that there has been no impediment to Elon Musk augmenting those devices with additional devices from his company?
I'm not aware of anyone impeding, the ability to get Starlink. We've had people that had them before. People started receiving them after. It's come from, volunteers and fire departments across North Carolina. It's coming from FEMA. I have no doubt that, Mr. Musk has helped with this. This has been a joint effort. And again, that's part of the story, how many people have come together to help. For example, our AM radio station, which the tower on Chambers Mountain went out, run by a generator, they were sent a Starlink from Johnston County, which was delivered by helicopter, then transported by police to go to the AM radio so we could communicate with our citizens. So again, one of the legacies is very important for us to know. When you're on the ground, you're not seeing politics, you're seeing progress, and you're seeing people caring. And I get people outside the region want to take their, angles from whatever party you are, but people are getting Starlinks immediately. And they're ordering Starlinks. I have no doubt it's on people's Christmas list this year, basically we went through.
Some have said that, and you've alluded to mis and disinformation being spread during this storm around the area, and it's coming from multiple sources. Yes, it's coming from Donald Trump and some of his supporters. It's also coming from hostile foreign governments, and it's also giving rise to conspiracy theories, which we are told by media is hampering the rescue and recovery efforts and perhaps hurting the very people who need help. What's your take on that, Mr. Mayor?
Well, I mean, I agree. And the idea, because again, if I've been on the ground since 0 hour, I saw FEMA here immediately doing search and rescue and working with our emergency people. Look back 3 years ago, it took weeks and weeks to get our FEMA declaration. I was out of the gate saying that was unacceptable. If I saw some of the stuff people are saying online, I promise you, I would grab any microphone, any phone to say this is unacceptable. But I've saw, again, there were, I mean, Governor Cooper saw this storm coming. I mean, again, Jason, myself, and others were saying this. The National Guard was activated beforehand. But here's what worries me. With misinformation, especially some of our elderly, more vulnerable members of society, when you start telling them, and with propaganda, you can't trust your locals. You know, there is disinformation. That's the setup before the scam. And that's what worries me. As we have seen the heroes here, we have seen such bipartisanship. People just let that be our legacy. But we also know the wolves are coming. They want to take advantage of people. And that's why we're telling people, ask for legitimacy. Look for badges. You know, if not, look to a trusted source. But the misinformation is not just put out there. It's put out there for a reason, to divide, to question, and it's not appreciative. And it also scares people because there are so many sources here helping people, saving lives, rebuilding this place we call home. And so, again, it's not acceptable or appreciative when there's people outside trying to hurt and divide us.
Jason Boyer is with us. He's the chief meteorologist at WLOS-TV. The mayor has already said that the two of them have worked very closely together, and I'm sure, as in your position at WLOS, that you work with a lot of local officials scattered throughout your viewing area up there. Take us through this storm, Jason, as it slammed into the state. Why was it so devastating? Was it just the rainfall, or was it the wind? Was it the combination of the two? What made it so bad?
Yeah, it's multifaceted, Mike. We started out with what is called a predecessor rain event. And this happens in cases where tropical systems are large enough to influence the weather hundreds and hundreds of miles away from the center of the storm. And that was happening here in our region starting Wednesday that week that the storm hit. So Wednesday, we had a daily record rainfall in Asheville at the airport, over 4 inches. Then Thursday came, we had another record daily rainfall of over 5.5 inches. That was pre-Helene's arrival. So that's why they call it a predecessor rain event. These large scale tropical systems can create bands of heavy rain that train or move over the same areas well in advance of a landfalling system. And then on top of that, you had our topography. You know, I tell people, if we could shave the mountains off, you know, the rains wouldn't have been as heavy or intense. But we can't do that, obviously. And we have our topography that enhances the rainfall when tropical systems come from the south or the southeast.
Explain why that happens. Is it the mountains blocking the storms, keeping them in place, essentially?
What happens is you have air that is moving from lower elevations up into the higher elevations of our Appalachian Mountains. When air rises, it cools naturally and condenses into clouds. That's the water cycle everybody learns in, you know, second or third grade. But when you have the deeper tropical systems, the moisture content of the atmosphere is exponentially larger than, say, just a general thunderstorm. So you have a large scale movement of air to rise and create large scale heavy precipitation, and the mountains aid in that.
You mentioned the predecessor storm before Hurricane Helene came in, dropping a lot of rain and saturating the ground, giving the rain from Helene no place to go. So it caused these floods. Is this normal, or is this the new normal?
Well, it's a good question, Mike. We have historical storms to compare to. We have Francis and Ivan that came through in 2004, and a lot of people remember those two back to back. And they caused devastating floods. They didn't cause the scale or scope, if you will, of flooding that we saw with Helene, because there wasn't the predecessor rain event that we experienced with Helene. So I will say this. I will say, in the 15 years that I've been chief meteorologist here at WLOS, one thing that scares me more than anything is the amount of rain we get. We've set record yearly rain totals in the last 10 years. I've seen the amount of rain become more frequent in terms of the heavier rains. And I think you can link a lot of that to climate change. You can say, look, the atmosphere is warming. The oceans are warming. We are increasing the water vapor exponentially in some cases here into the atmosphere. That atmosphere is going to react. There is a result of that. And the result is heavier, more frequent, heavy rain events, and bigger storms overall, and stronger hurricanes.
And the challenge here, I guess, is the fact that the infrastructure that we have throughout the country actually was designed for a different kind of weather. And weather can wreak havoc on that infrastructure relatively easily, evidently. Let's talk about wind speeds, because I understand that about 35 miles from Black Mountain at Mount Mitchell in Yancey County, the wind speeds reached 106 miles per hour. It's the highest peak east of the Mississippi. Is that also, is that normal or is that abnormally high? Because I know they do get wind gusts up there.
Sure. And most of the strongest wind gusts that we experience in the high mountains come during the winter months where we have, or fall and winter months where we have seasonal transitions and the jet stream dives a little farther south and we enhance the winds there. So we have seen, in fact, there is recorded weather data at Grandfather Mountain, which is a notoriously windy spot. That's also one of the famous mountains here in our Appalachians and Blue Ridge Range that has exceeded 150 miles per hour, even 160 before. Hmm. That is rare. To have a tropical storm gust of 106 miles per hour, which makes it a hurricane force wind gust, that is rare. That is pretty rare for this area. Now, keep in mind, that's the extreme case. We had it, you know, the highest point, less friction, so you're going to get stronger wind gusts. The wind gusts down below that were recorded between about 45 and 65 miles per hour in many places around the mountain valleys. But that was enough to knock thousands upon thousands of trees down. Yeah. In a normal circumstance, you could get 45 to 65 mile per hour wind gusts. And if you didn't have all the rain beforehand, sure, there would be trees coming down, but not anywhere near the scale that we had with all the moisture.
Hurricanes can be difficult to predict. They wobble. They don't always follow the spaghetti models that we see on television. And even Hurricane Milton is kind of slightly altering its course, which may be beneficial to the folks in Tampa if it's still going to go to the south of Tampa as opposed to a direct hit. And people who don't live in hurricane-prone areas, which I would think the North Carolina mountains are certainly not a hurricane-prone area, they may not fully understand the power of these storms. I know that when Hugo came through Charlotte, I was on another radio station. We were telling people for days before the storm came that this is going to be serious. We're going to have significant power outages, et cetera, et cetera. And even I didn't understand it. I woke up the next morning and thought, oh my gosh, this is serious stuff. Despite the fact that the forecast was really good on this, they pretty much pinpointed exactly what this storm was going to do. The fact that the Weather Service sent out an urgent message in advance of the storm warning, quote, this will be one of the most significant weather events to happen in the western portions of the area in the modern era. Do you think that ordinary people in the mountains fully got it? Did they understand what was coming?
That's a tough question. I don't think they did. Yeah. I mean, I think that and this kind of goes back to the misinformation stage we were just having the discussion about. Over the past, you know, several years, we have seen a lot of negativity towards expertise and science, a lot of doubt thrown in there, like, don't believe what you hear. You know, storms aren't getting stronger. Climate change or global warming, whatever you want to call it, is a farce. It's made up. You know, that gets ingrained into some people's mentality, and they do not trust someone like myself who is trying to get them to be safe. And, you know, this is a life-threatening situation, but do they truly understand the scope of it? I don't think many did. I think because we've had flooding before and they may have gotten through that flooding before, they think they're going to get through this one. And the message that we tried to get out was that it does not matter what the situation you've lived through before. This one is completely different. This one is going to be a much bigger scale.
Laura, you were the first person to say no when I said, did people know what was going to come?
Yeah, I mean, I think that media did their best to get the message out, but there's so many hard to reach people. There's people who are not glued to their phones and the internet. And I'll be honest, I mean, just being out in the field reporting, there's so many folks who I spoke with who I asked about, you know, did they feel ready? And they told me that they didn't get any mandatory evacuation notices until it was already flooding. You know, I think a lot of the infrastructure that maybe we needed to keep us safe just wasn't here. I mean, the shelters, they didn't, in Asheville, they didn't open until places were already flooded. And so I think, you know, that's a big deal, is to have that infrastructure in place. That is, I think there was also very unclear. People felt, we were told to self-evacuate, which I think folks were unclear whether that meant that they had to evacuate or if it was, you know, a vague optional status. So I think, like, the message to our residents in a lot of places, like, people did not know, or by the time they needed to evacuate, they had lost cell service and internet as well. So I think that communication blackout really, really hit us hard, and folks maybe didn't realize how in danger they were until it was too late, unfortunately.
Zeb Smathers, you referenced working with Jason in advance of the storm, so you kind of knew what was coming. CNN reports that for days before Helene made landfall in Florida, the National Weather Service in North Carolina had been warning of an historic combination of heavy rain, life-threatening flooding, and catastrophic landslides in the mountains, all of which came to pass. How informed do you feel you were, and why do you think a lot of people didn't get that message or didn't understand that message?
Well, again, it's lessons learned from Fred. The idea that a mayor of a town roughly 3,000 feet above sea level has to monitor tropical forecast in the Gulf as if Canton was 30 feet above sea level speaks volumes. And since Tropical Storm Fred, that's exactly what we've been doing. So our teams, Jason, other weather forecasters, we saw something happen in the Gulf that started sharing, you know, eerie similarities with Fred. However, we also knew how hot the waters were in the Gulf.
Yeah.
And so we started prepping the Sunday county and our town, working with Jason and others in communicating. The information was out there. The difference is in Haywood County and Canton, we learned our lesson last time, because now we're seeing our neighbors going through what we went through 3 years ago. Or how could this happen? How could the Pigeon River, a river that, yeah, we had two hurricanes in 2004, how could this happen again? We know. We're not taking any chances. So we had a different strategy this time, and we tried. I called, especially when the storm was heading west, one of the guilt that I have, I started calling mayors west of Canton, not east, and to say, look, guys, take this seriously. This is important. But also it changes, you know, they said it was once in a lifetime flood in 2021. Here we are 3 years again later. Yeah. The game's changed. So we realize it.
The phrase once in a lifetime is being bandied about a lot recently with various different storms. Clearly, the paradigm has changed. And we'll talk about that, among other things, when we come back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. We're talking about the aftermath of Hurricane Helene in the mountains of North Carolina with Laura Hackett, a reporter for Blue Ridge Public Radio. Zeb Smathers is the mayor of Canton, North Carolina. And Jason Boyer is chief meteorologist at WLOS-TV in Asheville, the ABC affiliate there. Laura, the death toll from this storm is tragically high, surprisingly tragically high. Where does it, the numbers keep changing. Where does it stand this morning? Do you know?
Yeah, we just got a press release from the state of North Carolina that said that it's 88 fatalities across the state. It very well may be higher. I know that we still have, you know, folks out there doing recovery. There are cadaver dogs. They're, you know, just combing through all of this devastation throughout the region. So it's been a really powerful catastrophe for our region. And it's, I think we are all kind of in a space where we're unfortunately kind of expecting that number to climb as folks piece through the wreckage.
And initially, Mayor Smathers, there were at least 1,000 people missing, unaccounted for, let's put it that way, in Western North Carolina. Communications outages and impassable roads accounted for some of that. You couldn't talk to them. You couldn't get to them. They may be healthy and wealthy, et cetera, but they were inaccessible. Now that search and rescue missions have been going on for a little over a week or more, where does that number stand this morning?
You know, I think in Haywood County, we've gone several days without any reported deaths, which is a blessing. Every time, I mean, as Laura said, you look at a press release and you click and you hope you see that number not going up. I expect that number to go up. But again, in Haywood County, I think we've stabilized because without lack of communication was key. But what you saw were neighbors that live in these areas and they know their communities. They know who live up the road. And so I commend all the volunteers from just following that basic rule, go check on your neighbors. And that's what we were saying leading up to the storm. Take this time, check on your neighbors, especially the ones that are elderly. We also know when storms hit, these hit impoverished areas, you know, people with less resources, less communication. And so I think you did see people step up and check on their neighbors and provide a place to live. Also, a lot of people, you know, are not found in shelters. They have family, they have friends they're living with. But without lack of communication, again, that number stayed out there. It fueled the rumor mill. But at least in Haywood County, our number has stabilized. And I hope that I'm not jinxing us when I get that press release today.
Jason, this once-in-a-generation storm washed away entire neighborhoods. It washed away entire towns. It wreaked devastation that will take a generation or more to fully recover from. Has it also, and should it also, change the way the people here in Charlotte, the people in the mountains, think about storms in the mountains? Is this something new, and is this something that will continue?
Yes, it will continue. We are going to see more storms come our way in the future. We are going to have episodes of extreme rain. We're going to have flooding. We're going to have more flash flooding. Getting back to how we communicate the message and how people react to it, I think now that we've seen this devastation, this is going to have to be the new norm in terms of how we react to situations. You'd never want people to panic. And that's the fine line, being a communicator to the masses. You don't want people to panic, but you want them to have a high level sense of urgency that, you know, this could be unsurvivable if you stay where you are. At the same point, you can't get everybody to react. People in this part of the country, like I grew up in the Midwest, a very small town, we're very, you know, rigid in our beliefs. We're rigid in our, we can fight through this or we can battle and we're going to survive no matter what. That attitude is a wonderful attitude in the aftermath of a storm. But leading up to a storm, you're not invincible. You need to react rationally, quickly, take the necessary precautions to keep you and your family safe. So getting people away from the rivers, away from these creeks, that's a huge task to ask anybody to do. It would literally have to come down to knocking on doors, door to door, to get people to understand they have to leave this flood zone or this creek is going to turn into a raging river. You have to leave now before it all happens. I don't think you get people to leave all of the areas that you want them to leave or need to get them to leave unless you go door to door.
You know, this is part and parcel of climate change or global warming, as you say, whatever you want to call it. And for years, scientists have been warning about this and that we were reaching a tipping point and that it was going to make certain areas of the world uninhabitable because it'll be too hot to live there. It would cause sea level rise. It would cause clear sky, flood, whatever you call it, along the coastline flooding. We didn't really talk much about the mountains in those forecasts, although we know that it's getting warmer. So maybe it's not the haven for people in the summertime that it may have been in the early 20th century. But the weather guy on television is the closest most people come to real scientists. You are a meteorologist. You are a scientist. You know what you're talking about. You're not a partisan hack. So Is a storm like this and the storm Milton, which is going to hit Florida sometime tonight or tomorrow, which is described as being unlike anything that's hit Florida in a century, are we going to have to start paying attention to this, to you? Is it too late to pay attention? I could go through 1,000 questions. Start there.
Well, it's never too late. I think that we need to craft the message in a way that people understand in a simplified way how serious a situation can be. Now, talking global warming or climate change every time I go on air might be a little much for especially our audience here in Western North Carolina, who, you know, overall the population definitely leans to the right and may not have the, well, let's just say, patience to want to hear me talk about climate change over and over again. So we have to kind of piecemeal it in there.
Well, then let me ask you this. Maybe they don't trust people. They don't trust scientists. This is not a political issue. This is a fact of life now. So, and you're going to have to deal with it. It's going to affect you at some point in some way.
Right.
Or family members. So are storms like this making the case for you?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's going to be the case. In the aftermath of Helene and the situation that we are still dealing with, you're going to have to, there's a new paradigm, as you said, Mike. There's going to be the new way of approaching these storms and the new mindset that people have to have when these storms come our way, that you need to move away from the water. You cannot stay where you are next to the creeks, the streams. We knew there was going to be massive flooding. We knew that the main stem rivers, the French Broad, the Broad, Catawba, Pigeon, we're all going to have historic crests. But what does that mean for somebody living on a small creek that's just trickling through their property on any given day? That was a message that might have been better delivered if, you know, we say, look, not only are these places going to flood, also these tributaries, anything that leads into a bigger river is going to flood. And I think that message of catastrophic flooding, historic flooding, got in there, and many focused on the big rivers, but the smaller ones too. All the smaller rivers and streams that flooded, I think, caused so much devastation as well.
And perhaps the message needs to be stronger. I heard the message from the mayor of Tampa, Florida, something I've never heard a mayor or a public official say the other day. She said, if you don't evacuate, you will die. I've never heard anybody say that before. Laura, this is not a political issue, but it's becoming one. Donald Trump, some of his supporters, have made false claims about insufficient help being supplied by FEMA and by state officials as well. He has said falsely that President Biden has prevented FEMA from entering Republican areas and only is helping Democratic-controlled areas. And the same was said of Governor Cooper, who is a Democrat. He has said that FEMA is out of money for this disaster because the Biden administration has given all of that money to help illegal immigrants come into the country. Also a blatant lie unsupported by any facts on the ground. How would you characterize the help that FEMA and state organizations and NGOs are giving to your area? Are there sufficient people? Have they been Johnny on the spot here, or are they holding back?
Mike, I would say it did take some time. You know, I think with this communication blackout, it made it really, really hard to just connect to these, especially these hard to reach areas with aid. So I would say the first, like maybe 3 or 4 days, we didn't really see a response initially. I think there was two factors there.
Laura, is that because they couldn't get there? I mean, a lot of roads were washed out.
Yes, exactly. That's what I was getting to, is that the roads were completely washed out and there was a communication blackout and they couldn't fly while the hurricane was happening. So I think it did take time, which did make folks feel a bit stressed out. But I would say FEMA is definitely on the ground here and helping, and the resources are flowing a lot more now, which is a great comfort. I think just these topographical challenges made it difficult to get here instantly.
Mayor Smathers, you've talked to the White House. I know you've probably talked to Governor Cooper. You're on the ground with FEMA and other state officials who are helping with this disaster recovery. What is your take on how this is going?
Well, many statements that you referenced are 100% not true. I saw FEMA in the hours search and rescue. I went over and thanked them, shook their hand and said, thank you for helping us. And look, we've had people, volunteers, our local fire departments, police. This is a combination. I mean, we have the military here. We have the National Guard. Again, they were activated before this storm hit. So they're here. And again, going to, you know, Jason's point, leadership requires leadership, not partisanship. Leadership requires making decisions in the world that is, not the world you want or fits your political narrative. And that's what you're seeing happening here. And that's what needs to happen here. So state forces, federal forces are here. There's going to be ups and downs. I have disagreements with FEMA, but I'll take every resource we can because the people in this region deserve it. They deserve the respect, and they're here.
Let me ask you, so for somebody who's both a public official and who is personally affected by this tragedy, much has been made about high government officials visiting this area. Donald Trump paid a visit to Georgia. President Biden has come to North Carolina to observe the damage. Vice President Harris has also made a trip to observe the damage. When these high-ranking public officials come, they have to bring an entourage of security officials and others with them, which stops traffic, which gets in the way of recovery efforts, etc. These people can see this on television. Is it just politics that they need to be here? Do they need to come to really understand the need, or can they be informed by troops on the ground of what's actually going on? And does it get in your way?
You know, again, a president is different than a governor or attorney general. And we've had so many Democrats and Republicans across the board already on the ground. And their entourages are just a couple SUVs. You have to see it to believe it. And also, when you see FEMA, when you see our state resources, it's harder to go on X and put something out there when you saw it with your own eyes. And this damage is incomprehensible. Until you see it with your own eyes, you cannot imagine the destruction. Until you stand in someone's living room whose house never flooded before and see their wedding album for decades ago, you know, covered in mud and destroyed. Look, we live in a very great era that we can put video up there and all that, but seeing the destruction, seeing the heartbreak, you need to see it for yourself, because again, much of these lessons learned, you have to experience it. And Lord knows here in West North Carolina, we have learned some lessons. The question now is, what do we do going forward? Because again, I think we can maintain what is special about this area, but we have to evolve and we have to prepare. And going forward, it's very important to realize with the new hurricane coming, these people are going to matter. We just can't see this as a few weeks. And it's up to our job to advocate in the years following. They need help and they need assistance.
Jason.
Yeah, I would like to add something to that. And going back to infrastructure and how decimated it was in this area, there's no way man can create anything that is going to be able to hold back trillions and trillions of gallons of water that fell on this area. The flooding's going to happen again. We cannot do much to prevent the flooding of these rivers. I grew up in the Midwest where the Mississippi River, we built levees around it, and the levees worked for most of the times it would flood. That's a flat piece of land where the river moves rather slowly. You put steep terrain, add trillions of gallons of water. If there's nothing that's going to stop the force of this water, it will destroy any levee. There's no way to do that. So we have to look at how we can build infrastructure better to maybe lessen the impact, but there's no way you can build infrastructure that is going to guarantee you have water, you have power in these situations. I mean, it could happen, you know, next week, it could happen 30 years from now. I think it's still going to have a major catastrophic result.
Laura, the Washington Post says in North Carolina, there is before Helene and after. Is that how most people will see this going forward?
Yeah, I think so, unfortunately, Mike. I think that we will get back to where we were, but it's going to take a long time. And there are just, you know, so many towns, communities, you know, sections of communities that were completely wiped out. And, you know, even in Asheville, like, for instance, there's the River Arts District, which is, you know, I think an area that's just so beloved by so many people. It's where the artists are, where the businesses are. Our city has put a lot of money into developing that section of just being this like pride and joy of Asheville, of the region. And that's just wiped out now, you know? And so I'm having trouble kind of, you know, this place where I lived my life, where I walked my dog, went to yoga, is just not there anymore. And so I think it's a stark difference. And I think just also, we all realize how precarious we are now with this infrastructure knocking out, you know?
It gives you a whole new perspective, and I think a lot of people up there, including you, Laura, may be in shock at the moment, and that's completely understandable. It's going to take a long, long time, and our thoughts are with you. And having lived through Hugo, which was nothing in comparison to what you lived through, I know what you're going through to a degree, a tiny degree. Laura Hackett is a reporter for Blue Ridge Public Radio. Zeb Smathers is the mayor of Canton, North Carolina. And Jason Boyer, chief meteorologist for WLOS-TV in Asheville. Thank you all for the hour.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.